You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Homefield Apparel.
Welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 278th edition of Assembly Call Radio, and it is our 910th episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of February 2nd, 2023. I am your host, the coach, Brian Tonsoni. And let's begin this edition of the Assembly Call how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment.
And Indiana is the national champion.
When it comes down, Indiana will be champion.
Martin takes the shot.
The Hoosiers have won the national championship.
This week's banner moment occurred last Saturday in Assembly Hall when Caleb Banks came off the bench and produced some solid results in a supporting role. With injuries and sickness, Indiana's had to alter its lineups and rotations all season long, and Caleb was just the next man up and was ready when the opportunity presented itself. He displayed a knack for rebounding and scoring at the rim in the game against Ohio State, and while his role will probably be limited for the remainder of the year, his performance on Saturday gives us some added rotation depth this season and a glimpse of what Caleb can do going forward in the years to come. It was nice to see a young man who works hard, puts the time in, wins his weight, shine when his number was called. It was a true Hoosier performance in a good winning performance last Saturday. Okay, now let me introduce my co-host for this week. Jared won't be here. He's currently flying in the air from Dallas to Indianapolis. Had his flight delayed due to some weather. Ryan is already in Bloomington, probably out and about, wondering why no one has asked him for an autograph or a picture yet. So if you see him, if you're in Bloomington, make sure you ask him so he feels good. But here with me, the Nick Sirianni of Girls Youth Sports Coaching in Cincinnati, the biggest Eagles fan. Congratulations, by the way, on your Eagles making the Super Bowl. And the president emeritus of the Robert Johnson Fan Club, one of the world's most respected bracketologists. He is Andy Bottoms.
The best of you sports coaching, you know that we got them. When it comes to analytic trends, you know he can spot them. For first-class bracketology, if you want the top, you gotta go bottoms. If you want the top, you gotta go bottoms. If you want the top, you gotta go bottoms.
Andy, what is your bottom line on IU basketball in the last week?
I think you had a mixed bag, solid game over the weekend against Ohio State, but then you follow that up with a disappointing, not the loss wasn't disappointing. I feel like we could say that about just about every IU loss this year. There have been very few, the Iowa game was close, but there's very few of the losses you look back and are like, yeah, they played well. It just wasn't their night. It just seems like most of them have been pretty, you know, just not their best work, if you will. And that was no different than the Maryland game. And the fact that they kind of hung around as long as they could made you think they might steal it eventually. But hopefully just a blip on the radar and one that they can bounce back from pretty quickly with Purdue coming to town. That game was important no matter what. Maryland, a tough place to play. I thought Maryland had a really good game plan, executed it well to slow IU down by that token press and really trying to make IU take half the shot clock before they really got into anything. And they isolated matchups that they wanted on the other end of the floor, ran the shot clock down on their own, and were able to do that effectively. So hopefully IU can bounce back this weekend. Unfortunately, I will not be able to join you guys for the meetup. I have, luck being what it is, Mallory's team has not two but three games this weekend. They all occur in a little bit over 24 hours, which doesn't leave me a whole lot of time to drive to Bloomington, drive back home and be where I need to be. So I'm sure you guys will have a great time and I hate to miss it, but that is why I will not be there. Not to mention the fact that I have picked up a cold from one of the kids as well. So I'll do my best not to sneeze and hack all over the place here while I'm on the show tonight.
Well, we'll make sure to to have a few and
I expect
regards.
Nothing less. I
right.
expect
so,
nothing less.
We're going to miss you. We obviously wish that you were with us, but we understand totally. So joining us also is a former high school basketball coach here in the state of Indiana and now the brains and voice behind the IU film room section of our private IU basketball community. It's the other coach, Tony Adragna. That is just a great intro. Coach, what's on your mind today after a win on Saturday and a loss on Tuesday?
Yeah, a little bit of kind of what Andy said, up and down a bit, but I can't help but just be excited for what's ahead. And I think Maryland, you could talk about it till you're blue in the face about a lot of the various things that, kind of didn't go IU's way. And, I felt like Woody said in his press availability today, like, you look at those stats and you wonder how IU was even in the game. The way the backcourt played and shot, the defense wasn't anything special. They left some guys open. I really felt like Maryland was trying to give us that game at certain points. There was a point, I think, with 6-7 minutes left. Jalen had the ball. IU's down 5, drives, and misses a floater that he typically hits. So a bit discouraging that IU had an opportunity to go into this Purdue game on a 6-game winning streak. But nonetheless, I tweeted this out as well. The macro picture is that IU's been playing well, and they've got a great opportunity in front of them. And so, like I said, my overarching feeling for Indiana right now is just excitement for what's ahead here this weekend for various reasons. You got number one coming to Assembly Hall, but we've also got a meetup coming up and get to see you guys again. And that's always exciting as well. Wife and I scored tickets, so super jazzed about that, being in the hall. So hard for me to be anything but excited right now about what's ahead for Indiana basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to the weekend. Sorry, Andy, don't want to rub it in, but it is always good to see everyone on our crew and to see all of our loyal supporters and fans who can make it to Bloomington. We're not doing an official show this year due to some logistics issues, but we are going to be letting everyone know where we're going to be Friday night and Saturday after the game. So look for that on various social media. I think we're starting at Switchyard after the Purdue game is the thought, just to shake hands and say hello to everyone. But coming up here this week, segment one, we're going to talk a little bit about the Big Ten overall, the standings, some bracketology with Andy, and I'll give a few thoughts on that too as we head into February. Segment two, we're going to talk IU-Purdue. We're going to talk about what to expect, Coach and I are going to go over again a few strategy thoughts to watch.
Did you lose him?
Yeah, I was having enough issues that I thought it was me, but then I saw you move, and apparently it wasn't. So, all right, well, I will attempt to take the reins here for a minute while Coach gets things sorted out. As he said, we're going to talk a bit. Expand on a conversation that you guys had within the community about, kind of game planning and some things for Purdue. We'll hit that pretty heavy. And then a lot of questions in the mailbag. But all that will be coming up on Assembly Call Radio. So now we can talk about our presenting sponsor, which I do not have the music to play for since I'm not hosting. So everyone can just envision in their mind the Home Field Apparel song. But this edition of Assembly Call Radio, just like all shows on the Back Home Network, is presented by our friends over at Home Field Apparel, where they have the largest collection of vintage IU apparel that you'll find anywhere, with beloved logos like two different versions of the Bison and so many more, including the new logos and the new designs that they unveiled for IU just a few weeks ago. Unfortunately, they came out with a Duke collection today. And I know our friend Jay was upset at best that the new quarter zip was unveiled first with a Duke logo on it and not with an IU logo. So he may or may not be picketing outside of home field headquarters as we speak. But I would imagine that'll be coming for IU as well. So, you know, bottom line is that home field has something for fans and grads of pretty much every school, with unique vintage logos for all of them. And no matter what you buy, you know it'll be comfortable and the colors will last through many washings. Plus, you're supporting an Indiana-based company that came up through Kelly. And what could be better than that? So you can go to homefieldapparel.com and use our promo code HOME to get 15% off your entire first order. Again, that's promo code HOME for 15% off. Once again, the website, homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team. All right, so I want to talk Big Ten in general, do a reset here. I know there's a couple games going on now. Ohio State had staged a furious comeback, but I believe just lost to Wisconsin. Chris Holtmann got run in the first half of that game with Tim Higgins, who's probably working his 11th game in 10 days. And then I believe Michigan was beating Northwestern the last I saw. I think that one has gone final as well. So we'll take with a grain of salt some of what is, some of what is in here. But you've got Purdue way out in first place. I think at this point would be hard pressed to, they got a 3-game advantage in the loss column on everybody. I think you'd be hard pressed to, come up with a scenario where somebody's going to catch them. But then, you move down with 4 losses. You've got Illinois and Rutgers, both tied at 7-4. And from there, it is an absolute logjam with, let's see, how many teams do we have at 6-5? You've now got Northwestern, IU.
6, I believe.
Maryland, Iowa, Michigan State, and now Michigan after their win. Plus, you've got Penn State 5-6, Wisconsin 5-6, and then Ohio State is just in free fall right now. So you can kind of go from there. But really crazy, now I think 5-way tie or maybe 6-way tie for 4th place, which is a little bit hard to, kind of make heads or tails of at this point. But, you've got all these teams really within a couple games of one another with, kind of now Ohio State, particularly after losing tonight, Nebraska, Minnesota, kind of bringing up the rear of the league. But I think you got 10 teams with between 4 and 6 losses. So, Coach, it looks like you're back.
Yeah.
I did everything the, did went the ad read without the music. Tony wouldn't sing, but I didn't really ask him to either. So I can't give him a hard time about it. So we're just getting into the Big Ten
conversation. Yeah, sorry about that. Everything, TVs, internet went out for about a minute or so, and it just rebooted and on its own. So there must have been something going on outside our town here, but we're back. And the Big Ten's quite bunched. I don't know what you said. I don't want to bunch up
just,
on
just really kind of recap the standings, especially in light of tonight, where Michigan beat Northwestern, yeah. And then Wisconsin beat Ohio State. So that was really all I had done. So. We can go through that kind of however you want.
Yeah, it's just interesting, to go into the bracketology piece of it. There's some teams like that's a huge win for Michigan if they have any shot. I mean, they still got tons of work to do. But man, the Big Ten is just brutal. From top to bottom, with where you're going to end up and who's going to get that protected seed in the tournament. I was looking at Indiana's schedule, guys, and where are the there aren't any surefire wins. With Michigan playing like that against Northwestern, you have 2 games against Michigan. That was maybe a spot where you would think that Indiana could maybe not play its best, but Indiana's going to have to be sharp. They can't play like they did at Maryland too many times here down the stretch and hope to be in the top half of the Big Ten.
Yeah, it's funny how that changes. I mean, I remember when we came on in the summer whenever it was that the schedule came out. I guess that probably wasn't the summer. But, you looked at it and you said, hey, the first part of the Big Ten season is really maybe where they can make some hay. And then it gets a little bit easier down a little bit tougher down the stretch. In some ways that's, maybe true. Some ways not. I think looking at having to play Michigan twice in the last, few weeks of the season was pretty daunting initially. I think they've got certainly have some talent, but have not played up to it over the course of the year. Really, really tough read on what to do. You got Purdue twice, Michigan twice in that stretch. You do have Iowa and Illinois at home. Illinois you beat on the road, so you feel good about that. Iowa competed well with most people would say should have won that one at home or on the road. So, can feel good about those. But then Northwestern, you looked at that as maybe an easier game where you're playing at Northwestern and they gave it to you. On your home floor. So a little bit hard to tell. I think at this point, unless you're playing Nebraska and Minnesota, and I guess to a certain extent Ohio State, which IU is not anymore, I think just about anybody could win or lose any of those games.
Yeah, and you just want to jump right in as far as where you think Indiana is bracketology wise. I don't know if you mentioned that earlier when I was out or not.
No, I did. I did not. I had him as a five when I was doing stuff earlier this week. It probably wouldn't be that now, although I don't think losing on the road in another tournament caliber team is anything to totally hang your head about, and really would drop you too far down the list. But I think they'd probably be in that general range now. But there's just you get to that part of the bracket, there's a lot of teams dependent upon what you like and don't like when you're looking at teams' resumes, that you can go a lot of different ways there. So I think going into the week, probably would have been reasonable to have them anywhere between a five and a seven, more than likely. Probably still, maybe in the 6 to 8 range right now, but I would say 8 would feel fairly harsh to drop them to that point after, losing a road game to a team that hasn't lost a conference game at home and another, tournament caliber team. So I think that's kind of where they are right now. Lots of opportunity, not really any opportunities to totally stub your toe and take on a bad loss, but lots of opportunities for good wins if you want to take the glass half full approach.
Yeah, we moved them to a 6 from the 5 to a 6 as we scrubbed Tuesday, and then we scrubbed again today. So we think the thing that stinks is Wisconsin might move back into a quad 2 win because they went from 70 to 77. So all those cutoffs, and the committee's aware of that, to be honest. But when you just look at the raw numbers, Ohio State's going to move down and cost us a quad 1 win at home because they're obviously if they lost. I thought it was a close game when the internet went off. I don't know what the final was there.
I think it was 6.
They lost by 6. So,
and apologies, but anyway, I thought I was muted there when I was trying to blow my nose. Yeah. Sorry about that.
It's all right.
They lost by 6, so the margin kind of helps a little bit, but still not great.
But you got two teams that are counting on quad 2 and quad 1 wins for Indiana that right are on those cutoffs. And again, the committee understands that in the big scope of things. But, that's why you got to take care of at home and win some games that you have coming up that could really be solid on your resume. Get those good, solid resume wins and keep them because otherwise it's going to be kind of tough going on. But coming up on Assembly Call Radio, Coach Adranya and I, and we'll talk some basketball. We'll see if Andy likes it. So stick with us here on Assembly Call.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, everybody. We're off to a rousing start here. Andy's blowing his nose. It's not on mute.
Really sorry about that. If you ever see me, if I'm not talking and I'm not on mute, just mute me yourself because I thought I was doing it, but I must have double hit the thing and took it on and off right away. So.
It's
pretty much
my
every
internet.
Time, as soon as I get done talking, I feel like I need to blow my nose. So.
Amy and I decided to upgrade our internet to a fiber optic high speed and go away from satellite. We've had no issues since December 26 when they came out and buried the cord and did all that. I have 4 or 5 TVs going on at all times. No issues until we're on Assembly Call Radio and it just froze. Everything stopped for that moment. But glad to be back.
What are you going to do?
It's kind of like shooting. You know, some nights you're on and some nights you're off. Let's try to rebound within the show and find our shooting groove. But we're going to talk Purdue here. So let me see. Yeah. So I'm going to go to you, Coach Adranya, first. Or no, I'm going to go to you, Andy, first, and just go through roster, schedule, whatever you normally do with your previews. And then Coach and I will go back and forth, and then you can pepper us with thoughts and questions from your perspective. That's sure. The game plan. All right, here we go.
Sounds good.
Hi, this is AJ Moye. What's the only thing better than upsetting Duke in the Sweet 16? Celebrating it with friends afterwards. Join Jarrett, Andy, Ryan, and Coach for the assembly call after every IU basketball game. Go Hoosiers!
Welcome back to the assembly call. I'm the coach, Brian Tonsoni, here with Andy Bottoms and Coach Adranya. And it's a big week of Indiana basketball on the court, and it's going to be a big week for assembly call off the court in Bloomington. But our main segment tonight is brought to you by our new sponsor. That's True Blood Real Estate. Jim Trueblood is a longtime friend of Jared's and the founder and owner of True Blood Real Estate, where he's been helping people in Indiana buy and sell properties since 2006. And starting this season, True Blood Real Estate is the exclusive and official real estate partner of IU Athletics, with a team of talented agents to serve you in Bloomington and throughout Indiana. If you're looking to buy or sell estate in Indiana, you need to experience the True Blood advantage. So go to TrueBloodRE.com to learn more. That's TrueBloodRE.com, and tell them the assembly call sent you. All right, gentlemen, it's Purdue week. They're having a great season. We don't like it, and we need to bring an end to it. So, Andy, give our listeners a preview of what we're going to see in Assembly Hall on Saturday.
Well, I mean, if you look at it from a, you know, to kind of to take, you know, take the bracketology piece back, you know, they've got as good a resume as anybody. I think anybody doing it would have them as the number one overall seed right now. They've had a lot of quality wins, starting with those neutral court wins against Gonzaga and Duke in the PK 85. So, you know, have obviously played well at 22-1. Have had, I think, five Big Ten games that were decided by, that they've won by 5 points or less, also lost to Rutgers, and they're only lost by a point. So they have played some close games in Big Ten play, but have come out on top of those. And they've done it really on both ends of the floor, second ranked in adjusted offensive efficiency now, do pretty much everything well on that end of things. Obviously, rebound on, you know, offensive rebounding is a huge strength and something that I think you guys mentioned this on the show. Felt like Maryland probably had more offensive rebounds than they did, but they certainly had some timely ones that they were able to get putbacks and second chance points on. So yeah, that's one area to watch for. And then defensively, they rank in the top 20 as well. Don't turn you over, but they do everything else well. I mean, you'd kind of expect that. 2-point defense is really good when you've got a guy like Zach Edey protecting the basket. And they don't, you know, lowest defensive free throw rate in the country. And they don't give up a lot of offensive rebounds. So they don't make it easy for you on that end either. So just a really solid team. Obviously, everything, you know, begins and ends and runs through Zach Edey at this point. Got a pair of freshman guards who have played better than I think anyone could have reasonably expected. And a number, you know, a few guys, those are two of their, you know, kind of three best three-point shooters as well when you throw Mason Gillis in there. So a lot of guys that can hurt you. A team that runs really good stuff offensively. And I think it's been a lot better than people would have expected, really on both ends, given what they lost and what they had coming back, which is unfortunately a credit to Matt Painter. And I've officially said too many nice things about Purdue at this point, so we need to transition to something else.
I almost took your advice and muted you. You were being yeah. That nice, but I'm glad it's you praising Purdue, and people can get off my back about Coach Painter. But Coach Adranya, we did a little get together with Coach Motes and Coach Marlowe for the community, and we talked about how to guard Zach Edey, and then all of a sudden Mason Gillis goes off for 9 threes. So Recap for our listeners. I guess there's just a wide variety of things, but the best thing I thought that you mentioned was the ability to mix it up, try some different things, sometimes doubles from this guy, sometimes from this, maybe not double. Try to get them thinking and slowing down if possible. So go back over that, if you will, your thoughts and strategy of trying to guard Zach Edey first, and then we'll have to go talk about the other guys.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny because he's been guarded every single way possible, throughout this season, especially probably the last 10, 15 games. And coaches have tried to find that magic potion, just as our discussion was of like what would work. And, you know, what I would do if I was Coach Woody, would just vary coverages. So different ways you could guard Zach Edey, play him straight up one-on-one, try to force him to go over his right shoulder and use his left hand, because I don't want to say struggles, because he doesn't struggle anywhere from the floor, but he's not as efficient going over his right shoulder to his left hand. So you could play him straight up, and then every once in a while you could double from the baseline, then you could double from the middle. You could flood on airtime, which would mean, you're going on to double team as soon as the ball's being passed to him. You could double once he dribbles. There's a lot of different ways that you can guard a dominant post. And I actually thought the blueprint Maryland ran against TJD was a little bit what I was thinking of what Indiana could try to employ against Purdue, because Maryland varied their coverages. Sometimes they were coming from the baseline. Sometimes they were letting TJD go one-on-one. Sometimes they were doubling him on the dribble. And it was the most uncomfortable I've seen TJD, obviously in the last 6-7 games. He had to think a little bit. And, there were some times where the 5 games previous, he would have just dunked it, but he didn't know if a double was coming. So then he tried to dump it off to Race a couple times and turned it over. So I really thought Maryland did a nice job of kind of what I was thinking IU might try to do against Zach Edey, and just a lot of different coverages, make him think a little bit, because the second he knows, hey, the double's coming on the catch every single time, he's going to be able to pick you apart. He's a good passer out of the double team. The second he knows, hey, I'm going to be one-on-one every single time, I mean, dude's a dominant force. He's shown he can put up 40 points in a game. So just making him uncomfortable, disrupting flow. And as you and I talked about, Coach, a big part of disrupting that flow is possibly some token pressure, like we saw Maryland do against Indiana. Purdue runs a lot of sets, and a lot of their sets take a lot of time to develop. So the more time you can take off the front end of that, the more disruption they could have within those sets, and then they're scrambling because they're at the end of the shot clock and need to put something up. So I think that's a viable strategy. And then they've got two freshman guards, and they are very, very good players. Fletcher Lawyer and Braden Smith are going to be pains in Indiana's side for 4 years. But they're freshman guards. They've not played in an environment like this. You'd hope you could get them rattled a little bit, and not even just like pressuring and trying to turn them over, but just speeding them up, making them pick that dribble up at 25 feet to feed the post rather than 20, and extending those passes and just things like that. Got to put pressure on the ball. You can't just let it be an easy post feed where Edey can just catch, turn, and dump it and knock it down. I just spitballed for a few minutes there on basically a brain dump of everything that's going through my mind. But I've watched entirely too much film on Zach Edey. Like, I'm actually game planning for him. It's hilarious. Like, I clipped every single one of his offensive possessions on Synergy and watching him and dissect, like, oh, if he goes over, and I'm like, what am I doing here? Like, nobody's going to employ this, but it's just the coach in me. I just like, yeah, Here's what I would do. And so I'm excited to see what Indiana does. I thought they did a nice job last year against Williams and Edey defensively.
Didn't they go solo last year? I don't know that they doubled an awful lot, right? Occasional double, but they really were going to let them go and try to put pressure on the guards, right?
Yep, Michael Durr, Durr game.
So that's where I'm at, guys. With I thought Michigan State in the game one, when Edey hits the game winner at 63-62 or 62-61, Edey had 37 points or 35 points and took a lot of shots, but they only scored 60 some points. That's intriguing to me, because last night he got 18 and 20, and then Gillis goes off for 29. When if you double a lot, you give those guys who are very capable. You got Newman coming off the bench who's very capable. Jenkins coming off the bench who's very capable of hitting threes. And once they see one go in, maybe they see a second one and a third one go in. Maybe it's Lawyer. You know, we talked on the show about who to double off of. Mathias hit a couple threes the other game. So it's interesting. Like, do you want to trade, you know, twos for twos? Or do you want to, you know, because if you double, you're going to likely give up threes. And if you believe Purdue can't hit threes in that environment, then I think you need to do that. But I really liked, instead of just going one way or the other, totally double all the time or single coverage, but mix it up. I when you mentioned that the other day on the Coach's Corner, I thought that was good. Andy, when someone says to you, they're just going to let Zach Edey go and let him get his, does that make you feel better or scared? Or would you rather take the chance with the, as a, you know, a host, a fan, and a coach yourself, would you want to double and get it out of his hands and try to limit him?
I think Michigan State, looking back to games that I've watched them play, and I haven't watched them all. I mean, I lean that way just because it seemed to be the most effective. Now, you got to figure out where to draw the line and how you can do that. I think the key, if you're going to do that, is you got to make him catch the ball out a little bit further. I thought that was. You know, Tony talked about Maryland's game plan against TJD being really good. That was another thing they did that allowed their strategy to work. They forced him out far enough where he had to put the ball on the floor, and he couldn't just turn right into it. And even when he would get elbow catches, he's got to put the ball on the floor from there. So I think IU has to figure out a way to do that. That's easier said than done because they don't really have anybody who's that big that's going to be able to force him an extra step out. Where if you want to double as soon as he tries to put the ball on the floor, do something like that, you've got to give yourself the space to do that. And the further you push him out, the shorter the closeout back out to somebody else's. So I think that part's pretty important. But, yeah, it's hard not to look at what Michigan State did with him and feel like, is that your best chance to really slow them down as a team? Because you don't win. You know, it doesn't matter if he scored, you know, if they score more points than you and he has 10 or he has 40, it doesn't make any difference. You got to figure out what gives you the best chance and to take away threes. I thought you guys had some good conversation about who you double off of. I know you talked about not really wanting to double off of Gillis just because of where they might put him against the double. That was even prior to him going nuts from three-point range. So I'm sure you're vindicated in your belief that that was not the guy to double off of after that as well. So I think it's just a matter of trying to figure that out. And I think a lot of it is really just speeding them up. I mean, getting the tempo played at the pace that IU wants to play it. That really hurt in the Maryland game. And I think we had a question about this a little bit where against the press, I felt like once IU had broken it, it might take a while to break it, but there were times that they had a 3-on-2 if they really go aggressively. And they only did that a couple times. Once was toward the end of the game. And it's like, why would you just not attack that in other scenarios? So I thought they missed chances to attack in those. And instead pulled the ball out and started trying to run offense with 16 seconds left on the shot clock, which only plays into their hands. And if you look at the tempo numbers on Purdue, that's going to be similar to what they're going to want to do. So how do you get them playing a little bit faster than you want, get IU out in transition, take advantage of some of the athleticism that IU has on this roster? And that's really been, in a lot of cases, where they've been at their best if they can find ways to push it. So whether that's creating turnovers or even off of makes, trying to get out and run, like they have to find ways to get the tempo played faster than what Purdue wants it.
I believe tempo, I believe pressure on the guards are a big piece. And then whatever you want to do with, what shoulder or doubling from wherever. But I do think pressure the guards, make their passes tough, make them speed up is the best. And I do agree the tempo, you got to outscore Purdue kind of. They're going to score because they're pretty good at what they do, but can you run efficient offense? But we got a good guy too. His name's Trace Jackson Davis. So, if there's a Purdue podcast going on right now, they better be talking about how you're going to stop Trace Jackson Davis because no one's been able to stop Trace Jackson Davis. So I'm going to throw it back around the round table. If we won't give this to Purdue, but how's Purdue going to guard? What should our listeners look for? What do you think they're going to do with Trace Jackson Davis? Is Edey going to be on him and back off, or are they going to put first on him and then double with Edey, given a 7'4", 9,000 feet wingspan, so it's harder for him to pass out. I think those are the two options for Matt Painter, but he is 100% a doubler. He will not let TJD go one-on-one. Heck, they were doubling guards, the Pickett guard, and then the kid from Michigan State. I'm forgetting his name, the power forward, when he tried to isolate Hauser. Their guards. Hauser. He sent Edie off of the five-man. So, Tony, what can they do to slow Trace down?
Yeah, you know, what I'm interested in from IU is, as you mentioned, what do the matchups look like that Purdue's going to employ? Is it going to be first on TJD or Edie? I hope they put first on TJD. And then I hope what they do is they run ball screen actions with Race. And then you've got Race on short rolls and then dumps to TJD in the dunker spot, you know, which that basically means Race sets the ball screen and then kind of flares out. They hit him and then he's got space to go to the basket. You know, I think whoever Edie guards you put in ball screens, whether that be Race or Trace, you know, that's where he struggles. They're going to employ drop coverage. Indiana is one of the best teams in, you know, that 10 to 15 foot pull up or floater. You know, you've got Galloway, Huchefino are both, you know, average wise good. You know, Huchefino certainly struggled the other night in those types of shots. But, you know, if I'm Indiana, I'm certainly putting Zach Edey in a lot of ball screen actions. You know, and just thinking about like the offense that IU runs, you know, the action where they get Trace Jackson Davis kind of high post or at the top of the key, and then they kind of X off of him and then let him kind of play from there. I think that's great. And you know, even if Edie's not guarding him, I think Trace Jackson Davis can take Caleb first off the dribble too, and has some space to operate. So I like opening the floor up regardless of who guards who, and then playing off of that and certainly having the ball in Trace Jackson Davis's hands.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch what the initial matchup is. But I think this is a game where Huchefino's got to hit that pull-up jumper. Michigan State, in that very game that we talked about, their guards had a heyday at that pull-up jumper, not taking it in to the shot blocker in Edie, but pulling up ahead of time. I know we've talked all the time about it's not a great, you know, analytical shot, but you got a guy that when he can hit him, I know he missed him the other night, but when he can hit him, that's a weapon against that drop coverage. A lot of handoffs too. TJD can go into some handoffs if that's in the package, because when Edie's not out there to you know, switch out on a 3-point shooter, love to see some of that action as well. But I think it goes back to you, Andy, that the pace of play too, the way you beat a shot blocker is run down the court and get to the rim or kick out for threes before they get their defense set.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of what I agree with a lot of what Tony said. I think that's where they had some success against the Purdue bigs last year. Xavier Johnson did a really good job of trying to, you know, I think he was even able to get underneath Edie a couple times and still be able to score. So I think, you know, I think lots of things to look at there. I think it was the Wisconsin game where Jalen was really adept at getting to the elbow and made a ton of shots from there. Obviously that's a place he really likes to get the ball, but I think that was the game where just kind of whenever they needed a basket, he would get there. And I think you're right that that's a place that he's going to need to be effective. I think the other thing, and I don't see IU doing this a great deal, but something that I would think about is, do you play a little bit small so that you can't let them try to hide Edie on a guy like Race, and do you let Cop play? I thought that was something that I would have liked to seen against Maryland, quite frankly. Dante Scott was bullying anybody in the post anyway. At least you got to, you know, give him a different look, make him go out and try to stick the Cop. So I thought that was maybe in a game when nothing was working offensively, that maybe you'd throw it against the wall. Now you're also playing, you know, three guards who were generally ineffective in that game. So maybe that makes it a terrible idea. I don't know. But I'd be curious to see if you see some of that, you know, in this game as well. And, you know, that really forces Edie to guard TJD, also forces TJD to guard Edie. So you can't have that both ways, but, you know, be interested to see if there's some different variations of things like that IU, wants to try and put guys in uncomfortable positions. But, yeah, I think no matter who Edie's guarding, you got to find ways to, you know, make him work on that end of the floor. And he's not going to be interested in really coming out to challenge some of those mid-range jump shots. So I don't think you build a game plan around mid-range jump shots, as you said, Coach. But I think it's something that's got to be, you know, part of your arsenal and being able to try to get guys to help off and find shooters. But spacing becomes incredibly, incredibly important in this game.
I think the key is passing out of the double. Purdue is a heavy double, and they're going to come big on big. That's where they come and double. They very, you know, they might mix it up a little bit and leave someone if they believe they want Galloway to shoot. But what Painter has done is bring the other big. So if you have a low post and you dive the other post, can you get that ball? And then they're really good at rotating. They drop, they help the helper, and then they X out on the backside, so they're really effective on it. The ball's got to pop. If the ball sticks, in my opinion, against Purdue and anything that Coach Woodson runs, if that ball doesn't move, Purdue's going to have their defense set or their rotations or their closeouts and really cause trouble for Indiana. So we've got to analyze, and Trace Jackson Davis had some really good games, Coach, where he's made quick decisions. I think he's got to make quick decisions. He can't do that crab dribble, and then the double team comes, and it's 7-foot guy and first, and then we get tipped balls and make it easy for them to go the other direction. You got to be quick with it, and you got to find the open man, and then you got to find the next, that one more passing, and then you got to be ready to catch and shoot because, you know, Indiana offense is stand on the outside, wait for the ball to come to you, and take advantage of double teams. This is a place where Coach Woodson's offense could work if that ball gets out of there. But it's easier said than done against the huge size that that Purdue does. But that, to me, is the key, because I think we'll knock down shots at home, and I think the crowd will get going. But we've got to get the ball out of that double and get it passed around, reversed to the open man, and then you got to be ready to knock down shots. You can't be hesitant, because when you're playing a number one team, you've got to take advantage of open looks and then play with confidence and knock them down. So, Andy, come back to you, and then we'll finish with Coach Adranya before we move into the last segment. What's the game going to look like if IU wins, or what are you expecting on Saturday, or maybe just hoping for on Saturday against Purdue?
Yeah, I think if IU wins, you see them, one, get off to a hot start and really get the crowd in the game. I think, two, you see the game played maybe not at IU's ideal pace, but closer to IU's ideal pace than closer to Purdue's. And I think you'll find, you know, one or two guys who really are able to step up and supplement the scoring. You know, I think you're not beating them without strong games from Trace and Jalen. But, you know, what they had during that winning streak was generally, if those two guys were going, there was at least one other one that stepped up. Wasn't always the same guy. Sometimes it was Geronimo. Sometimes it was Galloway. Sometimes it was Cop. I think you need a couple guys to do that, really hit shots, hit some timely threes to get the crowd into it. So I think that's what it looks like there. You know, also find ways to, you know, get a few foul calls on Edie and get, you know, find ways to limit his touches. I don't see that happening. I think it's one of those things that kind of perpetuates itself in terms of, you know, he's a guy who doesn't foul. I think officials just don't know how to officiate him. Honestly, on either end, I don't think they know how to officiate guys guarding him. I don't know that they know how to officiate him guarding others. And so, you know, maybe you get a couple calls to go your way there to really give yourself some momentum. But I think it's a lot more about pace, a little bit of balance, and certainly not having to survive an off night from Jalen, because I think those mid-range shots are going to be super important.
You have a couple really good things there about officiating Zach Edey. I think he's so big and his hands are so above everyone else that a lot of fouling happens with your hands. And so, I mean, his hands are so big, but he bodies everyone, and the officials are looking at the shot and the hands. And I think he benefits from being so big that he really doesn't bring his hands down. He's been taught really well to keep his hands up. He doesn't swing. He's not one of those guys who tries to get off the ground. He just stands and then, you know, get That's part of the reason, and I don't think he moves his feet very well. So guys get to the rim, and then he just reaches out with that long wingspan and blocks shots at the rim. You see guards beating him all the time. You see post players beating him all the time, and then they're at the rim. But his stretch just gets the ball. You got to beat him quick, and you got to get to that rim fast. You can't hesitate, and you've got to maybe go under the rim, use the rim for protection. But that's the fouls in Edey is something – to watch for. Tony, what's it look like if IU wins on Saturday?
It's going to be a lot of fun at Switchyard. Oh, yeah. that's gonna happen regardless.
That's a true statement. But it'll be a lot better with the win.
Absolutely. A couple things that I think can lead to an Indiana win. You know, we talked about pace, so I wanted to pull up some Purdue stats. Purdue doesn't let teams get in transition often, but when they do, they're not good at guarding it. They're actually in the 17th percentile in the country in transition defense. So if Indiana can get out in transition, that's where Purdue's kryptonite's at. You know, again, they know what they're good at and they know what they're bad at, so they're going to try to limit that. But if Indiana can push the pace, and I think that starts a lot with Trayce Jackson-Davis obviously finishing with a rebound first. That's something we haven't really talked about, but Indiana's got to finish possessions with rebounding because Purdue's a very good offensive rebounding team. And then Trayce can push the pace, you know, even if it's 1-2 dribbles and then get it out to a guard and go. But that does play a difference that Indiana's bigs can push the ball up the floor. So that's a big one that I'm interested in seeing. Purdue does tend to fall asleep sometimes on the defensive end. Where sometimes, you know, they'll rely on Edie or something that's down low, or they're looking to see who's doubling. When teams finish the possession with a cut, Purdue's in the 5th percentile in the country. So Indiana, if they can move off of those doubles, and not just
the dives.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's going to be opportunities there. And then you had mentioned, Purdue's doubles, in the post. They are, sorry, I lost the number here. On post hard doubles, they're 13th percentile in the country. So they do it, but they're actually it's not as effective. They're giving up some shots there. And so, like you mentioned, if the ball pops, Indiana's going to get some looks. It's just not, you know, getting the ball to the right guy, not letting that ball stick. Woody even mentioned that today. They asked, what was the big difference between the Maryland offense and everybody else in the other 5 games previous to that? And he said, the ball stuck. We weren't popping. We weren't moving that ball around. So I think that's a big thing. You know, so those are kind of the 3 areas I'm looking at to attack Purdue. Again, that's transition. Obviously, Andy and Coach, you both talked about pace a lot. Transition is going to be big. Cutting, movement, and then, you know, off those post hard doubles on TJD, finding the open man and then knocking down shots. I think, I've been getting more and more flustered a bit with Miller passing up open looks. I know his shot takes a while to get off, but there's been some times where I feel like he's passing up good shots and taking a worse shot off the dribble. Just let that thing fly, man. And he had some good games. Right? He had at least the game at Purdue, I remember last year. He kind of kept us in it.
Yeah, he was huge in that game.
Yeah, so very interested to see it. I'm so excited for it. I think it's a great opportunity for Indiana. And you know Assembly Hall is going to be rocking and rolling. And I do think there's a good opportunity here. You know, Purdue's freshmen are very, again, good, seem stoic, nothing rattles them. They have not played in an environment like this yet.
Yeah.
And that'll be big, or at least I hope it will be.
You bring up, you got to limit offensive rebounds. If Indiana's going to win the game, they limit Purdue's second chances. And what you got to do, it's hard, especially if TJD is on Zach Edey, because there's a way to keep Edie. You just face guard him and block him out, and whoever's blocking Edie out is not the rebounder. But if that's your best rebounder who gets 20 a game, but the one thing that TJD does is that he can elevate and go up at the level where Edie gets stuff. He's just going to have to attack the ball. They're going to have to attack the ball, and guard rebounding, something I've hit on all year long, is something that you're going to have to crack down. If you do double, you're going to have to go and knock people around, and gang rebound that basketball. When that ball's missed and you play really great defense, you can't give 2 points because they're just crashing the boards with effort. You've got to hit that very well. So at the end of this segment, real quick, each person, besides the two main guys, Hood Schifino and Trayce Jackson-Davis, your pick to click, who we're going to need to win. Andy, who's your Jared asked this in the community, I think, and gave some options. I'm just saying, besides those two, who's the pick to click that helps Indiana beat the number one team?
Well, Jared was in here talking about it, that he was texting with Tamar, and I know he's had a good feeling about him heading into the Michigan State game. So I feel like that's he'd be inclined to say. I'm going to go with Galloway. I think a guy who's continued to shoot the ball relatively well, if he can hit a couple big threes, and if he can defend and harass the Purdue guards without fouling, then I think I think he could have a really big impact on the game and, emotional guy who everybody can get behind. So I'll say Trey.
Boy,
I'll channel my inner coach Marlowe and throw that out there.
Yeah, I tell you, we're really doing a great job. This ought to be replayed over and over again because we're bringing up great things. We got to guard without fouling. There's another thing that we need to talk about. Like, play aggressive, put pressure, but we can't get them in the bonus with 11 minutes to go in the first half or 11 minutes to go in the game and give them free shots. I mean, let Edie get his 30 or 40 and then shut down the fouls and shut down everything else. Rebounding, defending without fouling. And that pace, I'm going to love TJD getting a rebound, dribbling out. Edie's chugging down the lane. Guard stop, Trace Jackson Davis, find Miller Kopp within 8 seconds of the shot clock and hit a three, and the crowd goes crazy. We got to do that. Tony, your pick to click, who's not one of the top two?
Yeah, to me, it's who I just touched on, Miller Kopp. To me, Miller, it's, you know, I kind of look back and, like, what is his legacy going to be? As of right now, you know, there's no, like, time that really, like, stands out. It's like, man, like, Miller won us that game. Miller changed the game or whatever the case may be. Like, I feel like this is, like, could be a legacy game for him. You know, you come out, hit six threes or something to beat number one Purdue in your senior year, like the kind of last hurrah. You know, I just feel like he's going to have opportunity if they're doubling Trace. Be ready to shoot, knock him down. He's kind of a fiery player. This kind of feels like an environment that would be great for him to get going. And so that's kind of me. Like, not only am I saying Miller Kopp picked click, I'm saying, like, Miller Kopp legacy game.
I'm going to go with someone we haven't talked about. He's been getting a little bit of, you know, tough criticism, and that's Race Thompson. And this is a toughness game. Purdue plays with a lot of toughness, and Race Thompson's one of our toughest dudes. And I know he's not himself right now with his leg. He's playing really hard, but I think he can guard first and Gillis. I think if he can fly up and rebound and attack Edie rebounding, he's going to be on Edie at some point and be physical, and then clean up some stuff on the offensive rebound on the other end. And if he can get 10, 12 points and sneak them in at the rim, or maybe, you know, they're going to probably leave him open a little bit if they double and that ball pops and finds him. He's got to hit a three. But I think your guys' selection, let's have them all. You know, let's just everyone have a game. Everyone have a game. You rank them and we spank them and we meet at Switchyard and have a good evening. But that's our Purdue preview. But coming up in our final segment, we'll answer your questions. We have a jam-packed mailbag, so stick with us.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I stopped recording too when the internet thing went out. Andy, I think does Ari have the ability to pull that audio off of something? I'll try to text him.
I would imagine so.
I'm sure he can strip it off YouTube if nothing else.
Yeah,
I think you can take it off of YouTube. I think there's a way to do that.
Andy, I'm gonna turn it over for you. You have the mailbag pulled up?
Probably not. I don't know. Yes.
When was the last time? When was the last time number one came into?
If there's ones of these that.
Michigan in 2012, 2013, game day was in the morning, I think.
We haven't had one since then.
No, really? That last time number one was here?
I'm not sure. I thought I saw that on social media that that was the last time.
Makes sense.
That might be right. Say,
what was that, Andy? About
Michigan State at some point. I can just try to navigate through because I think we've hit on pieces of some of these. So
I can do that. That's good. I'll bring us to it, and then I'll turn it over to you. I appreciate that.
All right, sounds good.
All right, here we go.
Hey, it's Romeo Langford. What's the only thing better than hitting a game winner to beat Wisconsin? Celebrate it with friends afterwards. Join Jarrett, Andy, Ryan, and Coach on Assembly Call after every IU basketball game. Go Hoosiers.
Welcome back to Assembly Call Radio. I'm the coach, Brian Tonsone. I'm here with Coach Adranya and Andy Bottoms. We just got done breaking down a little preview of the game Saturday between your Indiana Hoosiers and the Purdue Boilermakers. But now it's time for our mailbag, and all questions were submitted via our private IU basketball discussion community, which you can learn more about and also join. Go to assemblycall.com/community. That's assemblycall.com/community. And Andy, you have the mailbag pulled up from that community. I'm going to turn it over to you to fire away some questions.
All right, sounds good. It just disappeared for a second, but now we're back. All right, so I'm going to try to skip over the ones that we already hit on some level. Jeffrey asked this, if X is able to return shortly, how quickly will Woodson play him, and do we anticipate chemistry issues? Tony, I'll let you take that one first.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Woodson touched on it today and basically said, you know, he didn't even say that he thinks Xavier could be back this season. He wouldn't go as far as saying that, and that was specifically asked. Now, some of that could be gamesmanship and coach speak, for sure. And he did note, he said, if you asked X, he'd say he could play tomorrow. So in terms of timeline, I just don't know. I've heard late February, but that's purely speculation. I do anticipate him being inserted back in the lineup quickly, not only because I think he should be, but because of the precedent we kind of saw with Race as well. You know, second game Race was back, he was back in the lineup. So, I don't anticipate chemistry issues. I anticipate better play, to be honest. I mean, I think the Maryland game was a fine example of where we really could have used X, you know, in terms of having another guard. You know, Indiana was very limited at the guard spot, especially ball handling. It was basically Scoop, Galloway, and Jalen Huchefino, and none of them really had a good game at all. And that X can kind of be that balancing act, and he can kind of be that dog and that guy that you know, just gritty, and he's going to go after it. And, you know, sometimes he gets too amped up, but, you know, as a coach, that's you know, you always say you'd rather have to turn a guy down than turn him up. And so, you know, to answer the question, no, I don't see chemistry issues, or anything of that sort. I think, X would be a welcome sight back for not only the fans, but for Coach Woodson and his staff.
Yeah, I agree. X has been real vocal on the bench and with his teammates, and I think he's looked to for a source of energy and juice. The struggle will be basketball. It won't be chemistry. You know, will he be back playing at the level he was at the end of last year? Because he was just fantastic the last 7, 8, 9 games last year. He finally learned all those lessons of when to shoot, when not to shoot. He was scoring double figures, 7, 8, 9 assists. It's going to take a while for him to get back to that. But the bonus is we get him back, and then you get a boost off the bench in Trey Galloway probably coming off the bench and being able to do his things. And anytime you get a guy of that level back, you're going to put him back in the lineup as quickly as possible. Maybe there's a couple games he's on a limit minutes rotation or limit to the foot to make sure it's healthy. But as soon as he gets the go-ahead that he's 100% healthy and can't re-injure that foot, he's going to be back in that lineup.
Yeah, I kind of asked this one because it piggybacks on that a little bit. This one's from Ross. Does the offensive struggles to handle the press and get the ball up the court due to a lack of ball handling ability by the Indiana guards, or is it due to the strategy our coaching staff has employed, or a combination of both? Seems that teams are catching on to this defensive strategy and using it more regularly on us. This seemed like a good segue because of what Tony said. And I don't know that Maryland was doing it. They did it more to slow the game down, I think, than they did to force steals. But, you know, Coach, you see other teams doing that to IU, whether it is to force steals. And And how do you think that changes when Xavier Johnson is back? Or is that something you think teams would do anyway, just as a means to slow IU down a little bit?
I think it's more personnel and then just emphasis. I don't think their strategy is bad. They don't necessarily turn it over. They've had a couple 10-second calls that look bad, but I'd almost rather have that than a live ball turnover going down for a pick six dunk, right? But I do think it would be better with X back because speed, you break it with speed if you're going to dribble, break the press. A lot of people would rather pass to break the press, but in college, you get a guy like X, just go weave through people as fast as you can, but under control and break it. My thought is just emphasis. With Galloway and a freshman, you're just worried about getting that ball across and not turning it over. But they're running stuff to get the ball over. It's just when that ball gets to the middle on the front court, then all of a sudden we just wait till the guards to cross the 10-second line, throw it back, and get into whatever action Coach Woodson wants. I would love to maybe see just an adjustment. If there's anything schematic, put someone in that middle that can attack. That's one way you can get them to not press. But most teams are pressing because if it takes time, it's harder to get the ball into TJD. It's the same thing we were talking about with pressing, Purdue. If you got 30 seconds to run your stuff, think how many times TJD's taken 20 seconds himself, just crab dribbling it down and scoring at Illinois. He held the ball for 7-8 seconds. Well, you don't have that luxury by shortening the shot clock. So I don't think people are trying to turn us over, but they're trying to slow us down. And my response to that is don't let them slow us down. Speed up. I'm a big pace guy. I wasn't when I coached because I didn't have players. But pace, early offense, make people pay for extending their defense for the full length of the court. They can't cover everything. Go fast, shoot early, and then get them out of that press.
Yeah, I think
– Tony, I'll kind of use that to go to these next couple questions, and you can feel free to kind of add your thoughts on that. But a lot of the questions our listeners are that good that they're putting questions in a way that they just flow nicely together. But, Tom asked, you feel we should have attacked the zone more, seem to get the ball over the 10-second line, then wait to set their defense? And Quang kind of piggybacked on that, said, why not punish them for pressing? Seem to just be satisfied with getting the ball across the 10-second line. So – feel free to address those as you kind of touch on the larger point of teams pressing us, but I thought those were related enough to go ahead and kind of throw them all at once.
Yeah, in terms of the zone offense, I wish Maryland stayed in the zone. Indiana was slicing and dicing that zone to the tune of, I think, 1.38 points per possession. And then against Maryland's man-to-man, I believe they were 0.6 points per possession, so less than half. So I thought IU did a fine job attacking Maryland's zone. In terms of the press – and making them pay and punishing them for pressing. I think it's important to note that, this isn't like the VCU, pressure attack and things like that. Like these are token pressures to literally just slow the game down. And Coach touched on that. And Andy, you touched on that as well. Like it's hard to attack a 2-2-1 three-quarter court token pressure press and make them pay for that. You can have X and try to get into your offense earlier and things like that, but there's not a lot you can – I mean, there's a couple of things you could do to try to beat that and get some advantage situations, but that press is purely designed to slow you down. And so to make them pay for that, I don't know that – there's a ton Indiana could have done. Like Coach said, you get the ball in the middle and you've got some 3-on-2 advantages and stuff like that. I think they could have done more of that. But, there's no set a screen here and have a guy go long and you beat it every single time for a 3-point or anything like that. So the best way to beat a press is not let them score. it sounds goofy and cliche, but, if you can hold them on the defensive end, they're not able to pressure, then you're able to push the ball in transition. And that was, my biggest gripe from IU in the first half against Maryland was I felt like Maryland was scoring really easily than able to get in that press. And I think I actually tweeted something like best way to keep them out of that is not let them score. But I thought Indiana did fine against the zone. I thought they did fine against the press. I didn't think the press caused a bunch of issues. It was just the fact that once they beat the press and they had to get in a set every single time rather than just playing out of, you know, kind of what the defense gave them.
Yeah, and their scheme is great. Against the 2-2-1, you draw two, and you have a crack back, and that's what you see when they throw it backwards to the guard, and then that guard dribbles up, and if they come and slow that down, then you crack back. That's where Indiana's got that 10-second call. But I think there were – what I'm in agreement with, Tony, is that there's times I think you can get that ball to the middle, or if they take away that middle, throw it up over down the sideline, and then from there, go. And get into your offense early, attack that lane early, and see if you can get something. Don't just settle for a reset. That's something that I'd like, is at least probe. But you're absolutely right. There isn't a whole lot you can do other than a crack back middle, long diagonal. Every press has those elements to it. And if they're taken away, you just got to get it across the 10-second line. But I do think you can probe a little bit more than what IU's doing once they get it into an attacking situation. So that's where I say the emphasis is, you know, attack that. If you got a 3-on-2, take advantage of it. Even if it's even numbers or there, but put that pressure on as they're sliding back into the zone usually from a 2-2-1. Don't let them get that defense set. But I've thought their zone offense – guys, it's been pretty good this year. There was one game where I thought it was is somewhat stagnant, and they run some good ball screens at the top. They run a little action on the baseline. I thought, you know, maybe the Minnesota game was when it was a little stagnant. I can't remember if they played a zone in that. But I remember one game I didn't think it was very good, but I do think they get that ball in the middle. And, you know, at times it's just maybe a missed shot or something else. But I'm a lot more pleased with their zone offense than what they do man-to-man from my perspective.
All right, so we talked about tempo a lot, so that makes this a good question from Roy. What's IU's best lineup to force an up-tempo game? And what's the downside of using a 1-4 offense? TJD is the point forward, initiating from the top of the key or the wing. Purdue with not much inside. Besides their five, if you're a coach, would you experiment with Banks or Gunn at the four for added quickness? I know I talked about using Kopp there, not really for added quickness, but just for to give another shooter. I guess take the maybe the first part of that is maybe the most important. Coach, I'll throw that to you first. You know, best lineup that IU could put out there to force an up-tempo game, but also an up-tempo game that gives them the ability to score on the offensive end. I mean, I think you can put a lot of guys in there to just go play fast, but to be able to get something that's going to be a cohesive unit out there on the floor at the same time.
Well, I think Tamar's got to be a piece of that. Obviously, you're going to have Galloway and Hood Schifino. The question becomes who's going to play the four. Can you play up tempo with Race or Miller at the four? And more than the offense, it's just a defensive question, right? Can you rebound? Can you guard if you go small? Because I think offensively it gives you advantages. But it doesn't do you any good if you score, you know, and then give up points on the other end matchup-wise. But I've been a big proponent of playing a little bit smaller, but that might have to happen when you recruit players, more guys like the Banks who can do a variety thing. You want to use your personnel the way you use it, and Miller's probably better at the three than the four. All over on both ends. But I think if you're going to play up tempo, you got to have a ball handler. So you got to have the two ball handlers that we have right now. And then you got to put Tamar in because I think Tamar can drive and score and run, you know, a little fadeaway. And he can do a multi, you know, Kopp will just have to be a spot up guy. I'm not CJ Gunn at the four. I think he's too small to play the four defensively. It's either Kopp or Banks that would slide into that if you played that. But I would like to see IU experiment a little bit more with that as the season progresses.
Yeah, Tony, thoughts on that?
Yeah, honestly, I think you could play up tempo with the starting lineup that we'll likely see. I think Race gets down the floor well. Trace gets down the floor well. Both of them can push the ball off of a rebound. So those are the things that I look at when you want to play up tempo is how quickly can you outlet or get up the floor? And then do guys run the floor well? I think Indiana's bigs in terms of, you know, Race obviously not at 100%. So maybe he's not able to run the floor as well right now, but, you know, typically he's able to, and TJD certainly runs the floor well. So, you know, I'm not as much lineup driven in terms of up tempo. As Coach mentioned, you know, you need ball handlers. You need guys that can distribute and make good decisions. But more so it's like a mentality of, you know, let's get it and go. You know, it's funny because I think last year the buzzword that Jordan Sperber always does for coaches press conferences, I think like 300 out of 330 opening coach press conferences like said we're going to play fast, and he clipped them all, and it was pretty funny. But I do think Indiana lives that, and you know, I think they do push the tempo and their bigs push it up. And I think last I looked at KenPom, Indiana in terms of average possession length, I think like 40th in the country or something like that, and in conference play second. And so, you know, they're looking to get shots quick.
Yeah, Purdue's like in the 320s, I think yeah. I looked at earlier. So definitely on the opposite end of the spectrum. All right, so last question will be from the great Bob Thompson. This is another kind of strategy question for Purdue. Is there merit to the strategy of not having TJD guard Edie to preserve his energy for the offense? So I'll add to that, Tony, before I throw it to you for your answer. You know, kind of what do you do if you're not, you know, how would that change what you do defensively if you didn't have TJD guard him? So let's assume to start the game out, that means you have Race guarding him. I do think you can see Renew on him, although at the rate at which Renew fouls, that may not be a wise choice. But I do think it would be a little bit bigger body to kind of throw at him, and maybe even a different look on the offensive end. But, you know, kind of what are the dominoes that fall there if you decide to not have TJD guard Edie, and are those worth, in your view, going that direction?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you do that, you're bringing TJD on the double on the catch if for some reason, you know, you've got Race guarding Edie. But, you know, what I think is really important to remember about Purdue is they don't just plant Edie on the block and post him up. You know, they're running a lot of actions, down screens. And then if you've got somebody like Race, he's going to be able to pin high, low, and just essentially just be taller and get a dunk. I think the only reason I wouldn't put TJD on Edie is if he got an early foul, and maybe you want to try something else. Because, I mean, let's be honest, TJD played, what, like 8 minutes last year in the home game against Purdue because Edie got him two quick fouls, and then he just never got in the flow of the game. So I think that would really be the reason I would look to employ something like that. It wouldn't necessarily be to preserve TJD on the offensive end. I think he's in – phenomenal shape. I mean, the kid could go for 80 minutes, I feel like, the way he plays. So it wouldn't really be preservation for me. It would just be if there was foul trouble and you want to keep him from doing that.
I agree. Fouls are going to dictate the matchup. If you see Race on him to start, it's probably more fouls than anything else. Maybe getting off to start without getting him a quick foul. But I can see what Tony's saying, too, that they start with TJD on him. Once he gets that first foul, that's the change that they're going to make. But I don't think, you know, you got to play somebody. And, you know, there's no preserving for the offensive end. But I do think it's more of a foul situation with that matchup. So, all right. That'll do it for our
show. I think that's the last of them, Coach.
Yep. So that'll do it for this week's episode of the Assembly Call. If you want to see us do the show live, join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording. Thanks to Bob Thompson for producing our music, and thanks to John Ringer of rigdesign.com for designing our logos. And thank you for listening. And until then,
take it from me, Juwan Morgan. Keep your elbows in, eyes on the rim, and go Hoosiers.
All right, I got to get out of here, folks. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
Catch me if you can, Coach T.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening and putting up for a few interruptions on my part with the internet. So, Ari, you're in here. Text me if you're going to pull the audio off of StreamYard, or you need me to pull the audio and put it in for you. Let me know, text me, so I know what to do after we get off the show. Everyone, safe travels, who will be traveling to Bloomington. And good luck to you, Andy, on all your games and stuff that you have to take care of this weekend.
All right. Appreciate it.
All righty. We will see everybody down in Bloomington. And there will be a post-game show. It'll probably be 20 to 30 minutes after the end of the game because Jared and Galen are going to go to the media. I think Ryan and I are going to head to Switchyard and start seeing everyone there at Switchyard right after the media gets done. Ryan and I both have media passes, so we'll be in to hear the interviews and that, and then we'll be at Switchyard, and that's where we're going to start. Friday night, we have a team dinner, and after the team dinner, we're probably going to hit Nick's in a variety of places we will put out on social media. Feel free to come find us and stay with us the whole night. Tony Stuckey is really good at doing that, and is going to buy us a beer or two. So we look forward, and without all of you guys, we wouldn't obviously have a show, but we really do appreciate you guys. So we'll see you on Saturday. Good night, everybody.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.